I'll leave you two charming people alone.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is season 5, episode 1, something I'm familiar with, Living With Disaster.
Oh!
And now here are your hosts, Sarah D. Bunting, somebody else.
Oh! Wow.
Hello. And Dave. Just
kidding. Want to take that one over again?
No.
No, that was on purpose. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We are embarking upon season 5. But first, a couple of notes on what's coming up on our Patreon. First of all, for backstory on that's happening at the top of this episode, patreon.com/againwiththis, where you will get the backstory. And you will also get 80 plus episodes, including episode 86 of Again With This, which drops March 4th. Let's watch Lisa Rinna in Marvel's Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., also starring David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
It is a thing that happened to all three of us. So please listen to that and all the other episodes. We have a really good time looking at sort of ancillary properties of these two shows and making fun of them.
Yeah. And now that we have so many new cast members, we have a whole new universe of people that we can talk about.
We sure do.
Speaking of people we talk about, Again With Them for the month of February is dropping March 3rd. This is, of course, our monthly digest about a 90210 MG, Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling's 90210 recap podcast. It's always trouble. I'll just say that.
It's about to get spicy, I think.
Yeah.
Not in an interesting way, just, you know, spicy.
It's true. So they're well into season 3 now, and we will be discussing that. That is, of course, a perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. And once again, that's this week, March 3rd. So you can get all of that and more at patreon.com/againwiththis. Let's do season 5.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Here we go.
We've already alluded to this. There are so many new shots in the credits and new people, including Rob Estes, who at the time was still Mr. Josie Bassett, not playing the same character from when he was on the show in season 1. Brooke Langton, who we already met at the end of season 4. She's in the credits as Samantha. And Lisa Rinna.
Forgot she made the credits.
Yeah.
So boring. I mean, part of it is that she's in the Jane storyline, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just saw her in a Monkisode.
Oh.
Talk about boring. As a dental technician who worked for Jon Favreau, that show really got some big guest stars.
Anyway, wow.
She's not always boring. Sometimes she's good.
They had worked together, of course, rather memorably in Swingers.
Mm-hmm.
One of the scenes everyone remembers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third new cast member is Lisa Rinna, who just has never changed her haircut since this time. And I admire it. I mean, I assume at this point it's a wig because, you know, who needs the Hass, but still.
Well, really.
Here's
it really suits her and she never changed it. She found a way to like kind of carry it through various trends. And I respect it too.
Yeah. That's why it was funny when she was in the first episode of The Shrink Next Door as herself, like in a scene that was supposed to have been taking place 10 years earlier than where we are now. Because like, oh, she still just looks like that. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here is who's not in the credits, Daphne Zuniga, and we will get into it. So let's start with our B plot. Jane finds a new arena to fail in, and her ex-bestie starts dating Jake on the sly. We rejoin this idiot and her sister in Jane's apartment. Jane anxiously babbling about the crime and the cover-up and how she'll be a suspect because of Richard's assault and all the shit people might have forgotten in the months since the finale. For them, of course, not for us. And Sydney, bless her, has no patience for Jane's after-the-fact regrets since all Sydney did for the week before this happened was try to talk her out of it. And she adds that since Jane didn't press charges against Richard, the cops don't know about the rape. So that's one connection they will not make. But that aside, Jane just needs to act normal and fake concern when she hears about Richard's disappearance. And then everything's going to be all right. Which is why it's extra funny when we smash cut to Richard gasping as he crawls out of his shallow grave.
I mean, first of all, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Which is, we saw Jane go talk to like an ADA.
Right.
Does the show remember that and just not thinking that counts as pressing charges, or did the show forget?
I think that doesn't count as pressing charges, and that they don't necessarily assume the cops investigating Richard's disappearance, because there won't be a body. It'll just be he'll just be a missing person.
Fair.
That they might not connect Jane and this one conversation.
Right. Got it. Okay.
So I was fine with that.
Mm, okay. I mean, it's a soap. Like, do what you have to do.
Right. So we roll through the post-credits B-roll with some extremely bad sub-music clip two.
Everybody's got a song to sing. Everybody's doing their own thing. Everybody's got a story to tell. Everybody's got something to say.
It goes on, but that's all you
need
to
hear.
Also, the B-roll itself, getting quite elderly now. Tie-dye and snakeskin cowboy boots, very 92, not really so 96.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, this takes us to Allison answering a knock at her door first thing in the morning. It is Billy, I guess still trying to prove he's a different person by controlling his rage. Clip three.
So I got your message on my machine. You couldn't make it last night because you had a headache.
Yeah. Yeah, look. I'm still not feeling well. Maybe we could talk about this later.
When later? What, tonight, tomorrow? Hmm? Al, I was waiting there all night for you. Okay, it's just, that's like... Thought we were trying to start over.
I know. I'm sorry. Tonight? I know I'll feel better by tonight. Like, 7?
Okay. Okay. I'll see you at 7.
I mean,
why is anyone doing this?
No, this is the tip of the iceberg of what people are doing on Billy's behalf in this episode and the next, and it's preposterous. Like,
she only
accepted the dinner invitation that she blew off because you bullied her into it. Like, take a hint.
Yeah.
But.
No.
The reason Allison could not just tell Billy to fuck off is that Jake is still in her room, and God forbid precious baby Billy ever experience any disruptions in his life. This will be, sadly, a theme of this plotline. But anyway, Jake heard everything and doesn't like being hidden, but he agrees it's going to suck telling Billy about them. Then...
Although, if you really want to keep it hidden for right now, like the Foley jingling of the belts going back on, yes. I was like, okay.
Yeah. He's going to hear that on the street.
Yeah, he is.
So then we're with Jane at the office, very hesitantly entering Richard's office. We see the back of a head we're obviously supposed to think is his, even though the hair shape is wrong, but it's Billy. He had an appointment with Richard about a campaign. Jane tries to hide her relief, but Billy can still tell she's being weird. And she brightly says she's just worried about Richard, which, like, okay, words not matching mood. But he's not answering his home or his car phone at the moment, so she asks Billy to go to Richard's house with her to make sure that Richard's okay, and Billy is like, okay, and is boring Jane with an update about his upcoming date with Allison as she pulls into the driveway. He wants to know if Allison said anything about him to Jane, even though in the next sentence he indicates he knows that Jane and Allison weren't speaking, and she confirms they still aren't, while noting that Richard's car is gone, which it was not, when she and Sydney drove off with him, not that she says that part. And ignoring Jane's objections, Billy opens the unlocked side door, calling Richard's name while Jane nervously says she's just going to leave a note. And Billy then notices muddy footprints on the hall carpet, clip four.
And they just stop. It's as if he just disappeared.
Or took his shoes off?
Yeah. Also, and you will see this in the visual aids, along with the string of drool.
Mm.
Which I meant to mention earlier, which accompanies him out of the grave while wearing a suit that I'm pretty sure he wasn't wearing in the finale, but fine.
Mm.
I appreciated the drool string that was like the most committed acting Muldoon has done yet.
Yeah.
But the footprints, Tara got a great screenshot of, like, it's like Arthur Murray went in and put, like, zombie dance steps in the hallway.
It is.
And then a couple of little spatters that are, like, somehow less convincing. It's amazing.
They are absolutely perfect footprints. It is absurd. Billy looks concerned. Jane nervously says she has to get back to work and is sure Richard will show up. And when they're gone, clip five.
I'll show up, Jane. You can bet your life on that.
Okay, so...
Ooh, what?
Yeah, we already knew you were alive, so okay, fine. Also, where is your car? Like, presumably you walked or hitched or something from wherever you were buried. But why would you move the car to make it look like you did go somewhere to support Jane's story of...
Yeah, why would you think Jane would come back and see that? Like, the only reason would be to fuck with her, which I don't see how you know that that would happen.
Right. She thinks you're dead. That's why she buried you. Like, there's no reason for her to be here.
Yeah.
And then Billy and Allison are on their date at Mel's Diner, since I guess he blew his budget on the fancy place the night before. Billy recounting his trip to Richard's house. Allison is snitty about Richard, and when Billy asks what's going on between him and Jane, he heard a rumor that Richard attacked her. From whom? Like, can we see these discussions happening again? Like, what the hell? Anyway, Allison just says it's a long story because some people can keep secrets, Billy. He then launches...
Not usually Allison, but sure, show, whatever. Well,
better than him, usually. But anyway, he then launches into his whole spiel. This is long, but we gotta hear it. Clip six.
I'm just gonna say this, so don't stop me or interrupt me.
Billy.
I mean it.
Anybody want to pick up?
You and I have been around the dance floor a lot of times. We've seen each other through the good times and the god-awful situations. Always, always, we've ended up drawn back together again. Think about it, you know, our marriage that didn't happen, horrible stuff with your father, and, you know, you're drinking, and Haley, D&D, Amanda, through all of that, that we are inevitable, okay? We fit. We are a couple. And that's why I never lost faith. And now...
You never lost faith? God, Billy, listen to yourself.
Let me finish.
No! Marrying somebody else is not losing faith? Come on, Billy, you're talking like you're some prince on a white horse who's scooping me out of my miserable life.
No, I'm not. I'm just telling you that I love you. Okay? Yeah, I guess I would like to carry you away from being a barmaid. You know you're better than that. We can do great things together.
I decide what I do with my life. Do you got it? No guy tucks me under his arm like some twit who can't tie her own shoes.
All right, I got it. I don't always say it right. Just saying, I love you more than my own life. And all I want in the world is to marry you. That's all.
This is insane.
This is, I mean, so I don't always say it right. You are a rising star in advertising.
Yeah.
Well, I want us to marry you. I can't do it, Karen. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, why? Why do you... Like,
I might have to save that no sound drop. It's so good. I just love that Courtney Thorne Smith is like, oh, come on. Seriously.
His whole ramp up also conveniently elides all of the shit that he fucked up in their previous go-rounds. You know,
I mean, the horrible stuff with your father. Oh, that you basically had no sympathy or empathy for until this conversation.
Yeah.
And you thought it might get you some points.
Yep. So he says it again. They glare at each other. And then she just gets up and leaves without saying anything. And he handles it graciously. LOL, JK, clip seven.
Damn it. Don't you walk away from me.
Oh, now I'll marry you. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Jesus. Ugh. Anyway.
Yeah.
The next day, Jane is recapping to Sydney what has changed at Richards since they were there. Also, inside Jane's apartment, there's a bunch of easels and canvases in the corner. Like, are we supposed to think those are Samantha's? I don't know.
Right. I mean, I guess we are, given that we find out later in passing.
Right.
But I don't think that's in this episode, and it hasn't been established. So, mm-hmm. like, this, whatever. The set decorator was like, look, I'm doing this once today.
Right.
When we're shooting four episodes, fuck off. Mm-hmm. So, fine.
So, Sydney suggests that the car was stolen or repossessed and that the footprints belong to one of the workmen and that they probably moved the car as well because of the construction on Richard's house. No mention that Jane and Billy were there in the middle of the day and there were not any workmen or signs of workmen there.
Mm.
Then Sydney sees Samantha outside with stuff her mother sent her from, in case it's relevant later, Maryland. And when she steps in, she trips over a shovel and clip eight. Shovel! Just enjoyed the sting. Jane and Sydney are very curious about where it came from. Sydney swears it wasn't out there 20 minutes ago. And Samantha is like, what is up? And the sisters badly cover and step outside to discuss. And in the 2 days since Jane made her down payment on the store, she has already had the door repainted. She has named the store Jane's, just another example of this very creative mind at work. Inside, we see her lying to a cop about Richard's disappearance. Richard had not seemed depressed lately, but just as Samantha walks in and starts hanging stock, Jane adds this, clip nine.
Though he did mention to me once that he was tired of the business and that he wanted to see more of life.
So
don't embellish. Ask Sydney. Yes and no answers only.
That's right. So that sting was at Jane seeing that Richard's dirty coat had fallen out of the garment bag that Samantha's just opened. And the cop notices Jane's panic at the coat on the floor, which, by the way, Samantha does not even try to pick up. You work in a clothing store, like, get the merchandise off the dirty floor. But Jane says she's fine, and he leaves, and Jane decides her best move is to freak Samantha out again. Clip 10.
Samantha, where did you find this? Where did you get this coat?
Jane, I didn't find it anywhere. I was bringing in your bags from the car like you asked me to.
Yeah, of course. You did. I'm sorry.
Now, you'll excuse me for saying this, but lately you've been jumping around like a crab in a steam pot.
A what?
It's an expression. Right before they die, blue crabs, they get all desperate, and they'll do anything they can to push the lid off the top, so you gotta hold them down in there.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's worth it, though. They taste great.
Yeah. I'm just gonna go hang up this coat, and then we'll, get busy stocking the shelves.
Sure, you're the boss.
I'll be over here continuing to make pointed references to Maryland.
Yeah.
Which is where I am from.
Yeah.
The land of Mary.
Came up sooner than
crabs.
I thought. So then it's last call at Shooters when Jake notes that Allison's been avoiding him since her date with Billy. So she pulls Jake over by the jukebox and says she thinks she's falling for him. He's happy to have found someone who looks at life the way he does. This is Joe Erasure. Like, Joe looked at life the way you did too. Shut up. But
yeah, this is, I mean, I have a lot of notes on the pacing of all of this, but
oh, yeah.
We'll get to it.
It's wild. So Allison says there's a problem, namely Billy's stupid proposal. She walked out on him, so he knows or should know that she's not going to accept. But she has to tell Billy face-to-face, and she wants to tell him about her and Jake as well. Jake thinks they better be sure that being honest is worth the pain they're going to cause Billy. You know, he's not a baby. Like, I know I called him Baby Billy earlier. He's an adult. He's been dumped before. He buried his wife this year.
Yeah,
you know?
I was going to say, like, he's a widower?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, not sure where Sydney was until after last call at the bar, but cut to her coming home to find Jane on her couch waiting for her, gun in hand. Jane believes that Sydney has been behind all the creepy shit she's been seeing since they killed Richard, trying to make Jane crack so that she will take all the blame. And they fight over the gun, which Sydney gets away from her. And this is also where we see that Sydney has clothes hanging on what I think are picture hooks on the living room wall. So this apartment's back to being a studio, I guess. I don't even know.
Yeah. I was like, where are we? I mean, she looks great, at least. A lot of good looks. Yes.
It's true. Sydney tells Jane again that she needs to start acting normal already before she draws suspicion on them both. And Jane barks that if Sydney's not doing this, who is? Sydney guesses that the coat was still in the car when Samantha grabbed it, which, like, only if Richard's corpse took it off, but okay. And when a person is under stress, they may start to see a plot where none exists, but soon their lives are going to get back to normal. Jane doesn't think hers ever will, and she cries, and Sydney hugs her. And the next day, Billy is at Shooter's, making an ass of himself some more. Clip 11.
Alice looks so much better in that Shooter's outfit than she ever did in that stupid, you know, the Amanda wannabe suits that she wore at the Indy.
I guess.
Guess nothing. It's stupid skirts are too damn short, you know? You know, you don't gotta show all that leg to be sexy.
Hi, 2 Cuba Libres and a Chardonnay, please.
Look, I understand. You don't want to marry me. It's cool.
Billy, not now. We'll talk about this later.
What's there to talk about? You don't want me. I accept it. You know, I can still appreciate. I can appreciate, you know, how sexy you look in those jeans. That's that mystery, you know?
Billy, you're drunk.
Hey, don't be mad. I should be mad.
You should be shutting up. The baby voice with the how good you look in those jeans.
Yeah.
I can't. This is cruel to us and to Andrew Hsu, in my opinion.
It is mean. Also, the mystery of a woman in jeans. Like, they're not scrubs. They're still jeans. Even in the 90s, and they were rather form-fitting.
Even those, the way Calavero sometimes wears them, are not that mysterious. AMA.
True. Jake agrees with Billy that he's had enough and offers to get him a cab, which, like, Melrose Place is not down the block from Shooter's. I have seen people walking back from it so many times, but okay. But Billy wants to stay there with his friends. So Jake says he and Allison will take him home after close, putting Billy in his office for the time being. And Allison and Jake exchange a significant look about how much harder their stupid friend is making this for them. And then Billy is drunkenly babbling, an arm over Allison's and Jake's shoulders as they walk him home, expositing as they put him on the couch that while he was in Jake's office, he found and drank a bottle of tequila that was in Jake's desk, which partly on you, Jake. Don't keep liquor in your desk at your bar. Walk out and get a drink in the bar.
Also,
you weirdo.
Why are you not bringing him to Wilshire Memorial? If he drank an entire bottle of tequila, he should be dead.
Yeah.
Sadly, no.
Billy then slurs that the two of them are his only friends. And once they've covered him on the couch, Jake invites Allison up, but she declines. And they do kiss a bunch on his doorstep. She lets him walk her in after all. And then this is where we cut to commercial. And the blip for this is the two of them kissing on the left and Billy nodding off on the right.
Oh, God.
So funny.
So good.
You can see in the visual aids.
It's a very, like, fly-catching mouth pose for Billy, too. He's just like, nyeh. He's like Ferris Bueller being like, nyeh, 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 when his mom is tucking him in.
He is.
Yeah.
So the next night at Shooter's, Jake wishes Allison could have stayed all night. He wishes they could figure out a way to be together without hurting Billy. She does too, but they're going to have to sneak around until they can. And in a booth, Jane and Sydney toast to the overworked LAPD, who apparently told Jane they think Richard ran off and that she should hire a PI, which, yeah, sure, we give up. Mm-hmm. It's on you.
I'm sure he's living in the double wide right next to Chris.
That's right.
Elko, Nevada.
Sydney doesn't think she's ever been happier in her life. She hopes Jane can relax now, too. One more toast to justice and to getting away with it. And in case you don't note the irony, there is a lightning crash at the end of this to underline it. And then Jane's going to bed. Samantha's thanking her for everything. Jane's bedroom window's open, but she tells herself she must have left it open that morning, closes it again. gets into bed, where she finds under her covers a mound of dirt with a crucifix on it. And outside, Richard listens to her screaming and crying and smiles to himself at a job well done. And props to him, because he pulled it off. It can't have been quiet.
Mm-mm.
So good job. Let us discuss our A plot. Peter's shady shit comes to light while Matt treats a re-comatose Kimberly. We resume this plot line exactly where we left off. Detective Wiley showing Amanda a snapshot of the real Dr. Peter Burns. And now Amanda responding that this is his meanest trick yet. He says he just came across this guy in a background check of whom? What? And that Peter must be hiding something. Amanda sticks to her guns, but the detective has facts. Peter moved to LA from Missouri. He's using this dude's medical credentials. He realizes he can't make Amanda testify against Peter, but he thinks she should reconsider since Peter doesn't deserve her trust. She shoots back that no one does, but she chooses Peter over the detective, which, okay.
Smart.
And then she and her two claw clips dismiss him. But as soon as the door is closed, we see she has doubts. And she goes to the detective's office the next day. She still doesn't believe him, but she wants more information. And after trying to make her testimony about Peter a condition of telling her anything and only getting a we'll see out of it, he goes on, and I'll just say, Ray, we'll see. That was always my mother's favorite dodge when I was a kid. And a story that she tells on me is the time that she tried to will see me about something I wanted. And I said, will see means no, because it usually did. We're going to see. It does in this case as well. But anyway, here is what the detective has to say. Clip 12.
Peter's real name is Dr. Peter Howell. Apparently, he was married to a woman named Elizabeth Davis. They had a nice life back in Kansas City. But then a few years back, she was killed and your Peter was charged with her murder.
Your Peter.
Was there a trial?
Would have been, but old Pete skipped town. No one's seen him since until now.
I suppose you have documentation to prove all of this.
All you want. Now, are you ready to testify?
I'll let you know.
What else do you want? The man lied to you. He's a murderer, for God's sake.
He's my husband. And before I turn him over to you to be butchered, I'm going to find some things out on my own.
We'll see means
no. Sort of cute that they made him from Missouri originally, which I believe Jack Wagner also is.
Cute. So, the funny thing about hiring this, about watching this at the age of Pam and Tommy is being like, go hire Anthony Pelicano while you still can.
Oh, God. The other thing about watching this in the age of like 41 minute episodes is that at her next stop, we spend like 2.5 minutes watching her park and walk up a front walk. Like,
yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. They spent so much time on that house that I looked it up to see if it was like a location they had used before. Apparently
it looked like maybe Ben's parents' house. From the unhomed car wash kid that David Silver tried to, quote, help.
Yeah, it's not. I thought it was Allison's parents' house in Wisconsin, but it's not that either.
Oh.
Anyway.
Okay. Could also have been Reed's parents' house. Like, mm-hmm. I love how any colonial were just like, it's a parents' house.
Well.
Amazing.
Usually the case. Anyway.
Yeah.
We'll get to that house that is not any other house we've seen before momentarily. For now. In Kimberly's hospital room, Matt says he heard from the nurses that Michael hasn't been home in days. He still looks hot, though. Matt has had a haircut they cannot disguise and is talking real fast. Clip 13.
You know, I tell you what, I'll watch Kimberly for you, and you can head back to the beach house for a few hours.
No, I'm not leaving Kimberly.
Hey, yeah, no offense, but there's not much you can do for her right now. And you're certainly not helping by sitting around here letting yourself go to seed.
Oh, yeah, well, no offense either, Matt, but, you know, you're really obnoxious lately.
Hey, I'm just trying to help.
Both haircuts look good. Calabro is like slowly returning to the feathery season one thing,
mm-hmm.
Which I love on him, and he looks very tan because there was the whole summer off. And yeah, I don't always see where T-Bone is going with this, but every now and then.
Mm-hmm. Amanda enters just then. Matt has something to tell her, but she needs to speak to Michael first. And when Matt has gone, Amanda perfunctorily asks how Kimberly is, you know, in a coma. Amanda backs off, saying she's going to Kansas City for a few days and giving him her contact info there. I don't know why. You have a cell phone. You and Michael were fucking. Presumably he has the number. But obviously, Michael wants to know what's in Kansas City. Amanda can't get into it. Cut to Peter's cell, where Peter is bored and crabby as he tries to dismiss the detective, who counters by saying he knows about Peter's assumed identity. What the detective has heard about Peter Howell isn't the whole story, Peter says. But the detective says he was convinced by it and lies that when he told Amanda, she was too. And Peter looks heartbreakingly betrayed before diving at the bars and trying to choke the detective while also begging to get to a phone to call Amanda and explain. But we're in Kansas City with her. She knocks on the front door of that disputed house and, hey, it's that BB Besh, answers the door. You definitely know her face. She was Belle Marmillion in Steel Magnolias. That's Clary's sister-in-law. But what I most remember her from is playing Maggie's mother on Northern Exposure. She usually had like a fluffy blonde lob, but she's in a short brown wig here, probably because she had breast cancer, which did not slow her career. She has 11 film and TV credits in her final year, but she died 2 days before this episode aired.
Oh.
We miss her.
And we do.
What I learned looking her up, Samantha Mathis is her daughter.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like we must have known that. But I also feel like we don't really talk about Samantha Mathis anymore.
It's true. Anyway, here she is, Mrs. Davis. Amanda wants to ask her about Peter Howell. Mrs. Davis tries to shut the door on Amanda, threatening to call the cops, but Amanda knows that Peter Howell was married to Mrs. Davis's daughter. And Mrs. Davis obviously does not care to hear from Peter's current wife that he's in trouble, but she does reluctantly let Amanda in. Cut to Boston, where Lisa Rinna at a restaurant bar is gasping at a front page story in the Boston Sentinel about a Beverly Hills doctor arrested for a murder and business fraud. I am not certain this would be front page news in Los Angeles, never mind in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, and also, like, whoever did the prop work on this paper is a hero. First of all, the top box, like, this is Boston. So sports will not be confined to the teeny box at the top right, but it just says sports. And then the below the fold headline is like, area man frustrated by traffic. It was like, I mean, it just made me laugh. It was really well done.
Yes.
Not it's in credible, the visual aids, but
of course.
Enjoyable.
This is before Lisa Rinna could have had a Google alert set for Peter. So I guess they have to get this information to her somehow. So fine.
Yeah.
Then Rob Estes in a chef's jacket comes around the corner calling Lisa Rinna Taylor and blah-blahing restaurant business. She calls him Kyle back. So there we go. Not the friend of Michael's that Jane kissed in season one. Mm-mm. And then he calls Taylor sweetheart and plays with her hair so we know they're a couple. She convinces him that everything's fine and then abruptly announces, you know how I've been saying I need a break? Well, I'm going to L.A. immediately. And Kyle protests that there's no one to cover for her, but she alludes to how hard things have been for her lately, largely because of Kyle, but then leaves before he can argue more. Back to Kansas City. We are really globetrotting in this episode, and I will let Mrs. Davis tell it. Clip 14.
Beth and Peter were inseparable, the most loving couple I'd ever seen. And after they were married, Beth's father, my late husband, took Peter under his wing and made him a part of his medical practice. Well, things were so good for a while. And then Beth became ill and everything changed.
What was wrong with her?
What it always is anymore. Cancer.
Now.
What it always is anymore. What a Midwestern thing to do. Love it. Good writing for once.
Yeah. But I'll also say, if they knew BB Besh's diagnosis and didn't change this to something else, this is a very mean thing to do to a legendary character actress.
Yeah.
Currently in the process of dying of cancer. Anyway, clip 15.
It went through her in a rage. There was nothing her father or Peter could do to save her. And she was in so much pain. You see, Lou, my late husband, couldn't accept it. What was to be done? Peter called us on a Sunday morning. We were just back from church. He said he had done it. Relieved her suffering. Peter told us he had killed our child. Lou nearly lost his mind. He brought the full weight of the law down on Peter. And then one day, Peter was gone. He disappeared.
I don't know what to say. I'm so sorry.
It's all right. You know, the funny thing is, a couple of years later, Beth's diary showed up in the bottom of a box somewhere. And her last entry in it, she said she was going to die by her own hand. That Peter couldn't do it. That he loved her too much.
I mean, it really takes a pro to sell not only that volume of exposition, but the old, the diary in the bottom of a box somewhere.
Yeah.
R.I.P. BB. Well done, lady.
Yeah, no kidding. So the reason that I kept that very long clip in is so that we can return to it in subsequent episodes, because I feel like a lot of stuff is going to get forgotten or changed regarding this story, probably.
Yeah, not to mention that none of this tracks in any way with this character as written at any point. But okay, soap it up.
Right. So at Kimberly's bedside, Michael tells her their highly abridged love story, clip 16.
Yeah, but there were bad times, but the good times were on fire. When they first met, he caught something in her eye, that smile. And when they first kissed, we couldn't stop what was happening. And then it was like a storm ripping through their lives, pushing them together. Nothing could stand in their way, and I don't know, they were destined to be together. They were married for a second time, in front of their home. A couple is you and me, Kimberly. And that home is our home. Come home. Please. Come back home. Come home.
Almost sells it, collabs.
Almost. I mean,
also, Marsha Cross still looks flawless with no makeup on a ventilator. So it's not fair.
No, her skin is perfect. But yeah, this is hilarious. If you've been watching the show, it's like, I mean, yeah, but
no.
Also,
like the old man in the sea. It's about a fish. Yeah. No.
You're skipping over all the times you tried to murder each other. Just saying.
And collaterally killed other people. Sure.
But there's no arguing with results. Kimberly's eyes slowly open. At the police station, the detective is basically ordering Peter to be kept in torture conditions. Lights on around the clock, loud noises. When the desktop cop that he's talking to sees Taylor trying to sneak past them and calls her back. She introduces herself as an old friend of Peter's, but both cops say the only people who can see Peter are his lawyer and his wife. And it's obviously news to Taylor that Peter's married. And the detective volunteers Amanda's name, and Taylor covers that she's sure they've met, takes off, declining to leave a number. And then Amanda's back at her mail slot when Matt comes in behind her, and she tells him he looks terrible and to get some sleep. And then clip 17.
Hey, do you know what's going on with Joe? I've got 3 days worth of mail for
her. Oh, look, Amanda, I forgot to tell you. Joe moved to Europe with Dominic O'Malley.
What? For good? If she just took off for where? Paris? And you forgot to tell me? What is going on with you?
Nothing. I'm busy, all right? And by the way, she's in Bosnia photo documenting Doctors Without Borders.
Oh, well, she could be on the moon for all I care. She's not getting her deposit back. I don't know this now. Is her stuff still in the apartment?
Yeah, I'm going to pack it up and send it off.
Oh, fine. When you're done, I'll hire cleaners, put an ad in, show it to a bunch of losers. Hell, I got nothing better to do.
Amanda, if you want, I can handle that for you. For a break on my rent.
Do it, and we'll talk later.
Get it in writing. It's my advice to Matt.
Yeah. Also, she knows full well that he's like mething out, and she's just like, all right, mm-hmm. so you got all this extra energy. Go ahead.
Yeah, seriously.
But also, oh, Joe.
I know.
Him?
Yeah.
And Bosnia?
Yeah. And this is how we found out at 33:01 in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
2 minutes before the final commercial break of the episode. Like, the disrespect. Come on.
Yeah. Just. But, I mean, adios, Joe. Good luck. You got mm-hmm. out. You got out at the right time, I feel.
That seems to be the case.
That's total character assassination that she would go with that slab of rotting beefcake. But mm-hmm. it is what it is.
Yep. So the next day, Taylor wanders into the courtyard as Matt empties out Joe's old place. He asks if he can help her, and she confirms that this is the complex that Amanda owns. Clip 18.
Why do you ask?
No reason. I just heard it was a nice place.
I mean, it's kind of crowded at the top for MVP, but that for Doug Savant, mm-hmm. he's in the conversation, I gotta say.
It's true. So they introduce themselves, Matt saying he's sort of managing the place, but kind of a stretch, but handy for the purposes of this conversation because Taylor would love to know if there's a unit open. Matt is happy to say there is, but it's a two-bedroom. Since when? Taylor says that's perfect. Her husband's coming and they could use the extra room. Matt has no compunction about confirming to her question that Amanda herself is married to a doctor and then shows her to the vacant apartment. But without even having seen it, Taylor would like to know if she could put down a deposit today. Matt doesn't see why not. None of this is your job, but good luck.
Yeah, also, that's not how this works, but sure.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
It's a soap. No reason at all.
That's right. Back to Kimberly's room where Michael's massaging her hand and she's thanking him for getting through to her. He will never give up on her again. And he reminds her about the alibi that she's supposed to provide for Peter. And she's like, right. He knows. She remembers. He's going to get the cops and a stenographer and Kimberly just has to make a statement. How could she say no to him? He saved her life. But as he leaves, she looks stricken. And at the jail, Peter is led in to talk to Amanda. No lawyer in sight. They're really just very liberal throughout this whole plot line of, like, Amanda can just pop in whenever she wants and it's fine. Like,
yeah. Also, the cell itself that they meet in looks like some kind of, like, you know, Renfield's kids situation. Like, it's there's, like, water on the walls. Like, I don't... Not that LA County Jail is going to be like, you know, a boutique hotel, but sure. It's a little Victorian. Anyway, whatever.
So he starts trying to defend himself, but she tells him she knows everything. She also knows the charges stemming from Beth's death were dropped and that Peter was exonerated, which is news to him. But she explains about the diary, clip 19.
You didn't do it. It's one case that can't punish you for something you didn't do.
You don't understand, do you? I did do it. I killed my wife.
I mean, you also tried to kill this wife, but yeah. I guess we're just not gonna treat with that anymore.
No, we're definitely not supposed to remember that, I'm sure.
No.
Back at the hospital, speaking of that attempted murder, Michael is leading in the detective and entourage, advising the detective to be gentle with Kimberly given the circumstances. But when they open the door, her bed is empty. Lightning flash. Michael told Kimberly she could check out, or so she claimed to the orderly that Michael bellows at. Tiny Michael slams this Nordic giant against the wall, threatening him about what will happen to him if Michael can't find Kimberly, like now. And the detective's face is like, this is like a day of soap opera. And that's where we leave this episode. What a journey.
Yeah.
It took us like around the country even.
Yeah.
All right. Let us close out by naming our episode MVP. Seems like you already have one in mind.
I do. And with all the love and respect in my heart for Allison's, no. And also boning Jake, mm-hmm. because that's been sort of something they've been trying to do since season one. And in an upcoming episode, we're going to find out some comparative things about that. And I'm going to talk about that then.
Mm.
But with all of that said, the late, very great BB Bash, absolutely the MVP. That was a really shitty scene to have to do in under the circumstances, and she did really great.
Yep. I agree. And in order to not choose the same person, although I certainly concur, I'm going to say Billy, who's getting everything he wants in life, it seems, by acting like a complete shithead. Everything's working out.
Yeah.
So I don't have to like it, but I guess I have to sort of almost kind of not really respect it.
Mm-hmm.
Least valuable player.
Jane.
Yeah.
I mean, on top of all the usual reasons, her hair looks like shit. Like, figure it out with the growing it out. This is like the third go around with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and don't turn on your accomplice that you dragooned into this whole thing because you knew you can do it by yourself.
Yeah.
She was right all along.
Check pulses twice. I don't know. You were married to a doctor.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That's it.
Next time on Again With This, Allison and Jake's affair U-Haul's ass, zombie dick stays hard to deal with, and McBride is the new Mancini. You'll need some new retinas after you contemplate our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. Follow the links there to our very special 90210 book, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you many extra episodes. I'm Chekhov's Shovel, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is extremely convenient posthumous diary entry Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And if anyone's going to kill his wives around here, it's our producer, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Ooh. What?